Salutations, King Trackers, and welcome to another maturely sliced anchovy in the heady nicoise of chaos. As the global financial system collapses around us, and bankers move to inspire our youth in the classroom, the saviours of a future generation, we ponder the deeper questions of our existence. In a society where the internet is in your pocket, we still can't recycle milk tops. Using a train toilet is still a lethal mix of contortion and apprehension. Electronic sheep daydream about androids until the rain stops. To soothe and enthuse your ailing mindsets, we cobble together some fine examples of lo-fi recording and marvel at the wonders of crass communication. This time we go continental with Jack and Danny, update ourselves on the latest health scares, stray reluctantly into the Craft Hour studios, and also take a look behind the scenes of the King of the Button studio. So kick back with your aural receptors and join the fun. King of the Buttons, a fizzy new wheat beer in the first class lounge of despair.
Welcome to the Ranko infomercial. I'm Farson Hinkle.
And I'm Ruben Butts.
Is your bird table a sparse, underused wooden ornament?
Is your grand piano getting under your feet?
Do you want to take ornithology to a new level?
Does your pipe organ scare the children?
Or do you simply want to attract more birds?
Has your piano stool got no legs?
We've got the products for you, including the geocentric laser-etched portable biofocal bird lenses, as endorsed by Ricardo Montalban and Sir Wendy Richards.
Just in, our grand piano tidy away safety net display unit and trampoline, as worn by Christopher Biggins.
Well, Ruben, they're exciting products, but let's look at them, let's explore them, and let's talk about some of those features that people really want. Because, as you know, the one that you know is Ranko. Well, Ruben, let's have a look at the, first of all, the geocentric laser-edged portable biofocal bird lens, retailing currently at 4,361 pence and 42 micropence. The lenses come with full Osprey and Kestrel adjustments. We are proud to say they are guillemot and swallow safe. And for the first 10 callers, there's a free sparrow sight on CD-ROM.
The Grand Piano Tiny Wave Safety Net display unit and trampoline. It's latex and copper. It's manufactured by a machine-built craftsman in Croatia.
Excellent. Let's just remind our listeners of the number to call for the Ranko hotline to get these products delivered to you via the Indonesian redistribution market that we've established. 550-681-2228 is the number to call. Just to remind you, we're mainly talking about birds and pianos and comestibles related to those areas. Ricardo Montalban and Sir Wendy Richards, as we said, have endorsed the bird lenses.
Who are both fully waterproof.
They're both fully waterproof. And if you are having trouble attracting osprey, other birds,
albatross,
like kingfishers, cranes, or even camels have been known to be attractive.
And penguins.
And the odd penguin, of course. I mentioned the free Sparrowside CD-ROM, which you'll get, available for Windows 3.1, and also available for the Amstrad CPW. You can upload that, and that'll help you basically bifocularize your geocentric quarter.
Which is, of course, fully dishwasher safe.
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad that you've mentioned that. 550-681-2228 is the number.
The old Grand Piano Tiny Wave Safe Net, they're flying out. We've had an order for one already. The trampoline unit is fully anti-static, and it's fully dishwasher safe, fully waterproofed, and comes with 14 free tins of Ronseal.
And you mentioned Christopher Biggins as a wearer.
Christopher Biggins, yes, he's long been in the market for Grand Piano Tidy Away units. And of course, the Grand Piano Tidy Away unit, safety net display cabinet and trampoline can be suspended from any 28 iron foot pearl of your choice.
Excellent. And remember, callers, if you order both products together, you'll qualify for a mystery-free gift, and you'll also qualify for the reduced postage and packing fee of £3,500 available in the US of States.
The Tidy Away Safety Net works on pianos, organs, pianolas, cement mixers, and xylophones.
The geocentric laser-etched portable biofocal bird lenses are fully adaptable for blind and partially sighted people, and will even work with the deaf.
And they are anti-static.
They are fully anti-static, and we have, I'm pleased to announce, a British Kite standard safety mark pending. So call now and don't delay. It's Ranko today, and remember, the one you know is Ranko.
Your home is at risk if you do not keep up these repayments. Warning, risk of poison. This product must not be submerged in water anywhere near the borough of Luton. Value added tax of 28%. Warning, organ donation is compulsory to customers of this product. The image of this product may vary significantly from the actual one delivered. Warning, this product does not yet exist. Caution.
Much caution.
Caution, postage and packing includes lead. Please call now for easy loan payment terms. This product is not for use outside of the USSR. Warning, this product may contain nuts. The disabled and infirm must not use this product alone.
May cause drowsiness.
Licking this product may cause temporary insanity.
Ranko. Ranko. Ranko.
What's this to do about the man with birds in his trousers or something?
Well, I'm glad that you've asked me that, because it's a popular story this week. There's an Australian man who apparently was caught, I think it was at Heathrow somewhere, with two live pigeons stuffed into his trousers.
I don't know where to start with that one. Why?
I think... I'm not sure whether he was particularly enamoured with those birds themselves, or whether he just thought he'd try to get them through through customs.
Do you think they might actually have been his wives, and he didn't have passports?
It's possible, because, as you know, in exotic countries like Australia, they do have some very strange customs.
They do marry pigeons.
Do they?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a big thing there. Or was he going to France, where they were going to eat them? Because they eat virtually anything in France.
This hasn't become particularly clear throughout the story, but he also apparently had a couple of pigeon eggs secreted about his body.
In his pants?
Not in his pants, but in a little container somewhere, hidden. It didn't quite say where.
Apparently he had two crocodiles in his pants.
Did he?
Yeah.
Did he?
And a kangaroo under his hat.
They didn't spot that one until
they... They didn't spot either of those two. They were so chuffed with the pigeons that the rest of it got through scot-free.
That's it. Maybe that's what it was. The pigeons were a decoy for the albatross.
Indeed.
It's quite plausible.
That does make sense now.
Have you ever been stopped at customs because of an animal about your presence?
No.
No?
Thank you for asking.
Looking at you, and I'll, you know...
It's quite conceivable. I was once stopped at customs and given a thorough grilling.
Really?
Because I was a young single gentleman at that time, with long hair, and I had five large drums of white powder in my bag.
Really? And what were they?
It was cocaine.
Was this on the way back from your Bogota villa?
No. I was flying into New York, and I was visiting a family who had a young baby that had been born in England, and they'd gone to America, and they couldn't get the milk formula that they liked, that the baby liked, in America. So
the special cocaine.
Would you mind bringing four big fuck off tins of SMA baby milk powder through customs on your own? And I said, yeah, no, that'll be absolutely fine. They're putting me up for free for like 2 weeks or something. And I thought, yeah, that'll be fine. Then as I actually got into customs and retrieved my bag, and I was standing there, and the guy said, what's in that bag? And I said, four large tins of baby powder. And he looked at me and said, Frank, we've got a comedian here, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And they did take me into out of the line. And gave me a bit of a grilling, said, where are you going?
Did they tamper with you in a way outside of the law?
No.
No?
It's completely legal over there.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's completely legal.
I
don't think the cattle prod was necessary, to be honest.
I was once stopped and searched in a similar way when I was coming back. I think I was coming back from Prague. And again, I was travelling on my own and looking a little bit suspicious.
Indeed.
And I had a big briefcase, you know, well, not a briefcase, but like a kind of shoulder bag.
Full
kind
of Nazi gold.
Yeah, full of Nazi memorabilia and Holocaust pictures. But now that's another story. Basically, I had this bag, and it was absolutely kind of brimming with stuff because I'd overpacked it, basically. And when the customs officer looked in the bag, the first thing that came out of the bag...
It was a goldfish bowl.
It was a false,
with a fish in it.
A false leg. No, it wasn't. It was like chocolate, but just wrapped in foil. So it looked really suspicious.
Homemade.
It looked like a block of something, right?
Why was it in foil?
Because I think what happened is I'd obviously eaten a bit because it was cold and I was, you know, hungry, you know. Mm. Don't keep my metabolism up.
Yeah.
So I got rid of the paper, so it was just in silver foil. So it looked a little bit like Semtex or drugs or something. And to make this worse, I'd put a couple of pairs of headphones in the front of the bag. So the first thing that came out when he unzipped that pocket was this kind of block of stuff in foil and loads of cabling, loads of wires. Yeah.
Mm.
And similar thing, I think.
And then he looked up at you to see you disappearing quickly across the concourse with your fingers in your ears.
Exactly. So, but the family that got you to smuggle the SMA milk stuff, they give you a belt as well, didn't they, with lots of sticks of rock on it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And some detonator device. It was a toy, I think.
And you got an alarm clock as a gift.
But when you come back from Prague with your Semtex,
yeah. A chocolate.
That's what. Yes. Yeah. I was going to say that does explain where you were for those 7 years and came back with your Siberian tan.
Yeah, I was wondering at which point you were going to kind of mention that because it was a story I didn't think you'd find plausible.
You might be wondering why, when you came back, I was living with your wife.
Yeah,
and we had four children.
I did wonder that.
I wasn't going to raise that issue.
I'm terribly accommodating.
You are. Anyway, do the washing up quick.
I'm Barbara Pepperjewel, and while I'm not basting my knees to the sounds of David Essex, I like to listen to this program.
Hello there!
Hello.
I'm Jack Humphreys.
I'm Danny Denton.
And welcome to the Jack and Danny Show. This week, we've decided that we are going to Frankie.
That's right, we're going over the Channel to our French friends in French.
That's right.
Which is in Spain.
Now, Danny, as you know, you and I have studied for some weeks, or perhaps minutes, to get to grips with the language.
It's very important to converse properly with foreigners, or John, as they like to be called mostly.
What we decided to do for you, listener, to help you out when you're in Frankie, is record one of our conversations that took place actually in a restaurant here.
Now, I want to order, Jack, a bottle of that wine and stuff.
Well, I tell you what, Danny, it's very simple. Simply follow along with me. Gac on. Le bottle, do le vinesse.
And make sure it's proper brown ale in there.
Yes, if you'd like a different type of wine, there are three varieties. White or blanqué, as it is known.
Green or grenou.
Red, which is known as rogue.
And those are the three types of wine, mostly drunk in Spain, which is somewhere in France.
Excellent. Now, furthermore, we had some delicious dishes in Frankie, didn't we, Jackie?
That's right. I had a rather nice bowl of soup. Now, I wonder how I might order that again if I went to another restaurant.
It's very easy, Danny. It's simple as this. Je voudrais des potages dos lunes.
I say, John, over here. Yes, I'd like uno bowl, if you?
Bolos.
Bolos, thank you. Of dons le soup. Le nice soup avec le bouse in it.
Now, I don't know about you, Danny, but I'm a big fan of seafood.
So am I, Jack.
And stuff. Frankie happens to be on the coast with the English Ocean.
Now, how would you order your favourite seafood?
Well, I'm glad you've asked that, because I'm a big fan of mackerel. And thankfully, in Frankie, mackerel is a very similar word. Macarellis.
Le macarellis.
Le macarellis, or if you're feeling adventurous, dos macarellis provençale.
I see a young waitress there, let's have her over. Now, ahem, Doris, voulez-vous walkie over here, mes amis? I say that's knocked up bendy.
Now, we all like a bit of bread and a bit of water with our dinner, don't we?
And some booze.
Frankie goes mad and he has loads, and he often has it between courses.
Is that why they reek of garlic?
Quite possibly. Now, always remember, when ordering your water, there are two kinds. There is still water, known as Stylace.
And the other type of water, which is fizzy pop.
If you don't like fizzy pop, remember this helpful phrase, sans gaze.
And what's more, I'll tell you what I like with my soup and blue wine, and that's a nice cigarette.
Yes.
Now, tell me, what is a cigarette in this Frank language?
Well, Frankie is very, very keen on the cigarillo.
He loves cigarillos.
Yes. There are two main brands in Frankie, Tom Toms
and Blimbos.
Now,
I say, John, would voulez-vous come over here and light me up the Blimbo?
If you're looking to buy a packet of Blimbos, you might want to pop into a little kiosk, or a tarbuck, as they're known.
Here's one now. Excusez-moi, John. Je voudrais une bottle de Blimbo cigarillos. Jolly quick gracias, and then.
Yes, or, as I prefer, Tom Tom Blondes, a slightly lighter smoke.
You really are getting into the swing of things, aren't you, Jack?
I really am. Why not try and get in the swing of things with Frankie by joining in their national anthem, which I believe is about the Pope.
And garlic. And frogs.
Well, that's it for this week in our lovely adventure in Frankie. Join us next week when we go to Poly Portugal.
And join us the week after when we're going to Russia for the sun.
I woke up this morning. I went to my garden alone. I was buck naked. like a card from the phone. I saw lots of rubbish in the flower beds when I catch them dirty youths. I'm gonna knock off their heads. I got the dirty garbage garden blues. They're making me feel sick right down to my craw. I ain't sure who'll do it. Just because I'm 70, people think I can't fight back. Just because I'm 70, they think I got off the crack. I catch him in the pansies. I catch him in my yard. When I get on the Viagra, oh boy, I'm hard. I got a dirty garden pansy blues, and you better watch out, I'm coming for you. Oh yeah. And should you tell him, Colin? I'll knock off their heads with a rake. I use a spade if I have to. You better not turn around too quick,
'cause you're still on that Viagra.
I'll be coming right at you. I got the dirty low-down garden pansy dirty blues. Oh, that dirty, I tell you, I'm coming to get you. And if I had a drink, well, I'd be worse. I might be 70 and I might be near a hearse, but I'm coming to get you. Get that rubbish and that crap out my gun, or I'll kill you. I'll kill you, I tell you, I'll kill you.
Man, he kill you, stupid.
I'll get you both in the end.
James, you know those films that everyone has seen?
Yeah.
They're like, you know, the classic elements of our culture. They've been on telly loads. Everybody's seen them all.
The staples.
Like Superman, Star Wars, and all those ones. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, I've got a list of 10 here that I'm pretty certain that I've never seen.
Really?
And I think you haven't seen most of them as well.
I'm quite intrigued by that.
Because you've seen a lot of films.
I have.
A lot of art films.
You've some very artistic films.
Very.
Some of them artistic. You lent to me.
Indeed. I want them back as well. Yeah, okay. Anyway, no, not those ones.
Oh, right.
I've got a list of very popular, big, famous films here. And we're going to go through them. And even though I've certainly never seen them, you probably haven't seen them, we're going to see if we can describe what they're about.
Okay.
And if people are listening to this, if you are listening to this and you've seen this film, just see if you think we're right or not, because, you know, we probably are.
I'm interested, intrigued, and ready for the list.
Number 10. I'm going to go from 10 and then count down. I thought I'd do it that way.
It's quite a traditional way to do it, usually.
I started in the middle of it.
Good enough.
Number 10, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, no, I've never seen that.
Never seen it.
I've never seen that, but it's quite a famous film, and it's about, from what I can gather, it's about a number of things. Supposedly, it's about kind of things that would or wouldn't have happened if the guy in it hadn't existed.
Is he a ghost?
I'm not sure he is, but I think he gets a chance to sort of look at his life again from a different perspective, that kind of thing.
Okay. But so it's about a man?
It's about a man. Okay. And it's a black and white.
Yep.
It's snowing. It's Christmas.
Very artistic.
There's potentially a ghost in it. And I think it's about sort of redemption. I think that's the key word. That's all I know about it, really.
Sounds ace. Number 9, Braveheart.
See, never seen it.
It's about blue-faced Scottish people or something.
Yeah, are they Smurfs, aren't they?
Is it Smurf?
I think it's about a tribe of large Smurfs.
Right.
That take over Caledonia.
And they steal cows or something.
There's something to do with that, isn't it?
That does sound good. Number 8, Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah, I've heard of that, but I've never seen that.
That's Omar Sharif as a man.
Right.
Who's a doctor.
Which is a common theme across all of these things.
Many of them involve men.
They do.
And not all doctors are. So, yeah, no, I do know what this is about.
Okay.
So Omar Sharif is a man, he's a doctor, it's in Russia.
Is there any more to it than that?
No, don't think so.
I can remember my parents raving about it a lot and saying it was really good and it was like a big kind of breakthrough film.
Isn't it about 4 hours long though?
I don't know, but the only thing I know about it, remember about it, is that it's got a Rolls Royce in it, I think.
Nice. Isn't that Top Gear?
Could be, yeah.
Could be. So that's either Dr. Zhivago or Top Gear.
Yeah.
Number seven, The Great Escape.
Oh, now.
Steve McQueen jumping over a fence on his tricycle or something.
I have a recollection of seeing that.
Do you?
Yeah.
I might have to ban you from discussing that item.
Okay, ban me from that one.
It's about a breakout from a prison camp in the Second World War, But in real... and I think... Do they get away or do they all get captured?
I think they escape several times.
Right, OK. So they either escape or they don't, and they might get off scot-free or they might get killed. We just don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you, the best advice is watch the film. You'd probably enjoy it more. Yeah.
Could be.
But we'll keep providing the synopsis.
This is a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Number 6, Citizen Kane.
Ooh, now.
Orson Welles.
Ooh, now.
I've never seen it. Have you?
No, I don't think I have. I know bits about it, and I see film critics like Mark Kermode, whatever he's called.
Mm.
Is he called that?
Yeah, Mark Kermode. His real name is Mark Ferry.
Is that really his name?
It's a fact.
So he's changed his name after a vanity toilet?
He's changed his name from Ferry to toilet.
To Kermode. Mm. Yeah. It's not a very smart move. But anyway, he always raves and rants on about how Citizen Kane is like the best movie ever.
Mm. It's a book about a man who owns a newspaper, I think.
It's something to do with that.
Is it the Evening Standard?
It's about Robert Maxwell, isn't it?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Number 5, The Full Monty.
Now, interesting. I'll tell you something interesting about The Full Monty.
Of all the films involving men's penises that you've seen, this isn't one of them.
That's true. And I've also bought 2 copies of this film.
Mm.
And one on DVD and one on VHS.
Mm.
And I've never seen it.
Never seen it.
I bought them as gifts, you see.
For whom?
Just people I didn't like.
Fair enough, yeah.
Set in Sheffield, I believe.
It's set in the north,
yeah.
And it's about some men.
Some men with penises.
Indeed.
Right.
Number 4, Dirty Dancing.
Dirty Dancing. Now, my wife is a big fan of Dirty Dancing.
Is that also about men with penises?
I think there's a man in it. Again, a consistent theme. Yeah. But it's a dancing film, isn't it? The title suggests that it is about dancing?
I think so. I know something about this film, actually.
Okay.
There's a girl in it, right?
Right.
Who does the dancing. I don't know if that's the dirty dancing or the normal kind.
A girl and a man.
Indeed.
Breakthrough film.
So we can already work out there's a cast of 2, at least.
That's quite a big cast.
Anyway,
yeah.
There were 3 girls up for the female lead.
Right.
I can't remember who got it, but one of the 3 was Demi Moore.
Right. And Hilda Baker.
I don't know if Hilda Baker was the 3rd choice.
Okay.
Possibly not. Anyway, and the way they decided was they showed a large group of men, I think it was 250 men, pictures of the 3 girls and asked them, which one would you like to shag the most?
Were they in the nuddy?
No, I don't think so. I think
right,
in their dancing uniforms. And they all picked the girl that they got the part in the end.
So the men watching the pictures were in their dancing uniforms?
No.
And they were deciding who got their part.
The producers didn't know who to pick for the male lead, for the female lead.
Right.
So they showed a group of men pictures of the 3 girls they were thinking about.
Right.
And one of them was Demi Moore. One was unknown, possibly Hilda Baker.
Yeah.
And the other one was the one who actually did get the role.
This does ring a bell now. I think possibly Ruth Maddock from TV's Heidi High.
Right, we're moving
one
on.
Of the other...
Shut up. No, we're moving
it's
on.
It's a little bit too complex for me.
Number three, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I've never seen that.
No,
have you? That's a Chinese film, isn't it?
It sounds dangerous.
Is it in a zoo?
It's, is it sort of a CGI thing about a fox or something?
No, that's Kung Fu Panda.
Is it?
I've seen that.
Is that good?
Only it's a panda, not a fox.
Ah,
no, this is about a lying down tiger, dragon in the cupboard,
doing deadly kung fu moves
on strings.
In a forest.
We don't know a lot about that one.
No, but I imagine it's the kind of film that you get free with a newspaper.
I would think it's a love story or
about a dragon and a tiger who fall in love.
Absolutely,
and they have a child who is a diger.
It's the classic.
Which is the mix between a dragon and a tiger, as you know.
It's the classic story,
like a lonkey, which is a lion and a donkey.
We're definitely moving on now.
Right.
Before you get started on them again.
Okay.
Number 2, Last of the Mohicans.
Oh, now. And that's
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah.
Or is it Daravan Day? I can always get them 2 mixed up.
Is it? Or is it Damien Day?
Damien Lewis.
No. I don't
Inspector
know.
Lewis.
Right, okay.
No, we don't know anything about
Morse's sidekick gets lost in the Mohican jungle and has to live with a family of walruses
and tigers
and lonkies.
Yeah, and he gets tended to by Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah,
and It's a Wonderful Life,
and there's some Smurfs in it.
Finally, number 1.
Right, the big top number 1,
the big one.
Oh yes,
Titanic.
Oh, now,
never seen it.
I never seen it either, but that's partly because I can't be bothered.
Snap.
And there's an inevitability about that film, isn't there?
There is. I've kind of got an inkling of an idea of what happened in the end.
Yeah.
The other thing is, it's rubbish.
Yeah, some people rave about it and say it's a classic love story and, brilliantly acted. And
yeah.
Are there some songs in it as well, aren't there?
Yeah, Karen Dion does the song for it, doesn't she?
She's one of the...
goes on and on. There's a joke there to get there.
Not really, but was she one of the Carpenters?
No.
Okay. I think yeah. I might have got slightly muddled up there.
Indeed.
But so, it's a theatrical great, and people do, you know, often...
I think it was, for a long time, the number one most popular film ever, as in made the most money at the box office. I think it's been overtaken by something else now.
I think it's still most popularly rented VHS from Blockbusters.
Is it?
I think so.
Closely followed by Breakdance 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, a classic, an absolute classic.
Or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3.
The Secret... Oh, no, it was Turtles in Time.
Turtles in Time.
I nearly got it wrong. I nearly gave away the second Secret of the Ooze.
Neither of those two top films could go on our list, because we've both seen them.
And, of course, you and I have had a lovely time one day.
Sorry about that.
When we watched Airwolf the movie, one of the best movies ever made.
Indeed. Who's that bloke, isn't it? The famous bloke.
Directed by David Hemmings and starring David Hemmings.
Mm.
And... of course, Ernest Beef Bourguignon, whatever his name is.
Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah, Ernest Hemingway. And Jean-Michel Jarre Dugaloo.
As Stringfellow Hawk.
Yeah.
The cello-playing, eagle-loving fighter pilot.
You see, that is a film that you and I have seen, other people haven't seen. So it's the kind of, you know, we're coming full circle.
Right, we're doing another top ten next month.
Right, I'm going to write that down.
Welcome to Tune Notes. I'm Stupid Macaroni.
Hi, and I'm Wrestling Rob Haldwhistle.
We've got a rare treat for you this week. Listen out for the diminished note in the 13th second of the track. It's a belter.
Sure is a great session recorded in 1974, and we're very lucky to have it in the studio today.
You'd better believe your ears. Here it comes.
Here he is. Here's Colonel Fishcake and his tragic band with a song called Coleslaw for Mo.
Coleslaw for Mo, coleslaw for Mo. Dennis Rabbit in a garden of evil. Fridge on fire with a monkey's hat in a garden tree. Yogurt's on my leg, dripping with evil.
That was Mother and Baby, starring Danny LaRue as Auntie Mary and Robert Mugabe as Tiddles the Naughty Cat. Coming up next, following the cancellation of Frying Pan Fortnightly, we bring you a classic episode of Bread Bin Bulletin, first recorded in 1963 in a filing cabinet near Luton. We apologise for the poor quality of the sound recording in some parts of the footage. This was caused by the recording engineer, a Mr. A. Jones of Wales, who'd been at the cooking sherry.
Good evening and welcome to this week's edition of Bread Bin Bulletin. I am your host, Dr. Cornelius Brabantier. And joining me in the studio tonight is Professor Anton Ovenglove, author of the delightful volume that I'm sure is only too familiar to us all, Medium-Sized Kitchen Storing Units Through the Ages. Good evening, Professor.
Good evening, Cornelius. It's a pleasure to be with you as always.
Now, Professor Ovenglove, I wonder if you'd start by giving us your views on the history and the origins of the European bread bin.
Well, we now think that the bread bin as we know it was first developed in Lower Saxony during the late Middle Ages as a medium-sized kitchen-related storage unit. I mention it in my book, of course, on page 3 and again on page 698.
Fascinating. And, of course, it is only now, in relatively modern times, that we are finally starting to understand the complicated functions of the bread bin.
Yes, it's only using the very latest scientific methods that we are now able to state with some reasonable authority that the bread bin was designed to prolong the eatability of comestible bread products, such as bread.
But, Professor, who were the early proponents and adopters of our beloved bread storage device?
Well, many knights returning from the Crusades found that the bread they had left cooling on the pantry windowsill in the 11th century had gone somewhat stale by the early 1400s, and, you know, clearly something needed to be done. But you must remember that this was a long time before the established diet of the Tudors and Stuarts, who used to eat pasta, chicken Kiev, alfabeti, spaghetti, that sort of thing.
And noodle doodles.
Yeah, quite, quite. Well, during that, in the Middle Ages, the majority of people survived on a diet of goldfish, swans and peanuts. But many people did use fresh bread to provide themselves with sufficient carbohydrates to brutally murder Turks by the thousand.
Indeed, and of course we are all familiar with the famous link between bread bins and the crusading knights of medieval Europe. There was, I recall, a famous beat poem album by King Walnut on that very subject only a few years ago.
Indeed, it's a favourite work of mine, and in fact I have found that my enjoyment of that album is very much enhanced if one actually climbs inside the bread bin whilst it's playing, and I tend to listen by elevating the recessed lid by around 35 degrees or so.
What a good idea, Anton. I'll try that myself later on tonight. Although, presumably, you employ a somewhat larger bread bin than might be used for storage of standard-sized loaves?
Quite correct, Cornelius, yes. In my particular case, I tend to use the 1906 Pressteel Mark IV bin by Oswald and Son of Newcastle under Lyme.
Ah, yes, a delightful bread bin. Super bin. A delightful bread bin for those of larger-than-usual girth. Now, I wonder, Anton, if you'd care to comment on the related but lesser-known theory that was first published in the 1970s by Dr. Algernon Coconuts at the University of Bengal, which postulates that the Holy Grail itself was in fact a bread bin.
Yes, well, this is the infamous bread bin grail theory of 1976, where old Algy Coconuts postulated that the magical powers of modern-day bread bins, which, as we all know, temporarily suspend the forces of the universe from making bread go stale, is ultimately derived from the Holy Grail, which therefore must have been some kind of early bread bin unit.
Can I take it that you are not a subscriber to this theory?
That's right. In fact, it was recently discovered on a dig site in Mesopotamia that primary contextual evidence from the early 13th century indicates that the Holy Grail was in fact some sort of Tupperware, or possibly even a kiln ajar. However, many researchers now believe that, on the other hand, the Ark of the Covenant was very likely to have been a bread bin.
It's a fascinating development. Given the reputedly impressive capacity of the Ark, it may well have been some type of early version of the O'Reilly 1937 Fresh Bread-O-Matic Wonder Bin.
Very likely indeed, Cornelius, very likely. Although there are a number of other possible candidates, I'm sure you're aware. For example, the Ark could easily have been a Walkinshaw 1925 Imperial, or even the old Fotheringay covered bassinet of 1906, both very, very strong contenders.
Ah, yes. Well, I suppose we'll have to wait for your next book to really get into that debate, won't we, Professor Avenglav?
Yes, that's right, I'm afraid. In fact, I am just about to publish my latest work. It's a book in 14 volumes called The Ark Bread Bin of the Covenant, Essays on the Religious History of Comestible Storage Units.
Well, put me down for at least 3 copies straight away. And I'm afraid that's all we have time for this week on Bread Bin Bulletin. Please do join Professor Avenglav and I next week at the same time. You can also catch up on the latest dustpan news with me later tonight in this month's edition of Portable Cleaning Implements Quarterly. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Our new name and look from October 2007.
It's very exciting. We're actually recording behind the scenes of a podcast, and Dave here now is actually attempting to write something for the next skit.
What I've decided what it is that we need is an idea.
Yeah. Like a good idea, with preferably some kind of humorous element.
Some kind of scope for a joke.
Ridicule.
Or possibly more than one joke, even.
Or some lampoonery.
That's an idea with more than one joke behind it, actually.
That is difficult. To be honest, we've been searching for that Holy Grail for years, maybe months.
I think it might be too much for us.
To be honest, it could explode the partnership.
I think it's too ambitious.
A joke, you know, is welcome, but more than one joke is, I think, pushing it. To be honest, given our capabilities and skill, I think it's pushing it.
Do you think? Well, you're pushing the table.
I know, I did get that a clout then. I was hoping no one would notice.
You got excited.
But I am highly trained, so I imagine I can edit that out.
I doubt it.
Well, I'll give it a go.
Okay. Quite anyway, I'm creating.
Yeah, I've heard that.
King of the Buttons.
My name is Rock John Spangle, and I am a rock and roll star. Sounds good, doesn't it? It's not me real name, though. Me real name is Dennis Irwin Bogley. I'm a 17-year-old and I'm unemployed. Me dad says I'm lazy, but I keep telling him making it big in the music business has got nowt to do with hard work. Look at overnight sensations like the Bee Gees and Leo Sayer. I really feel that I'm getting close to a big break, though, as a rock and roll star. I bought some new bottle green corduroys and one of them cravats, and I'm thinking about getting some silver glitter to put on me jean jacket. I put about £2 worth of that hair cream stuff on yesterday and hung around outside our price with Miss Stringbag looking all moody. I could sense that any minute Phil Spector might arrive and offer me a record contract. After a couple of hours, the manager asked me to buy something or leave. I thought about doing something really rock and roll, like crashing a Bentley into the shop or throwing a TV out of the window. In the end, I just went to Boots to get some more Clearasil, then got the bus home. Our mum definitely reckons that my pop career is about to go intergalactic. She told old Mrs. Lewis in the post office that I was destined for stardom when she was paying the Lecky bill last Wednesday. Apparently Mrs. Lewis looked a bit doubtful and then asked me about my asthma. She's been laughing on the other side of her face when I turn up in my Ferrari with Kate Moss. In fact, she has to laugh on the other side of her face anyway. She's had a stroke. Me dad still reckons that to make it as a rock and roll star, I need to have a band and some songs and that. He knows nowt, I told him. I've got what I need to succeed. Vision, style, and a Casio keyboard. He should stick to his bloody pigeons. His idea of superstardom is so out of date. What did Elvis Presley know about being an iconic pop star? I'm starting to get excited now, though. I've got me first gig coming up in 2 weeks. Me and Jacko are holding a Woodstock-style festival in the Mozart Suite at the Best Western Hotel outside the village. We've sold loads of tickets, I've sold 2 already, and I bet Jacko sold like 300 or summat. My dad keeps saying we should be rehearsing our set, but I've told him the music business is all about performance, not music. All last night I was practicing me dancing by jumping off the bed and pretending to smash guitars using my sister's tennis racket. In the end, me mam came up and told me to pack it in as she was trying to watch the bill. I bet the Osmonds or Michael Jackson never had to put up with this kind of parental interference.
Now, I see in the news that there's a restaurant somewhere in London.
I believe that's true.
I believe just one.
Okay, there's probably more than one.
Apparently, you can decide how much you pay for the food that you eat, how much you can pay for each course.
So nothing has any prices on?
No, and it's a kind of recession-busting... I can't even say it. Recession-busting measure.
Is it a credit lunch?
It could be a credit lunch. I like what you're doing there. It's putting the crunch back into the credit crunch.
Shut up.
Okay, sorry.
So there's no prices on any of the menus. What kind of food is it?
I think it's just ordinary, regular food. Right. You know, weasels.
Snakes.
Yeah, snail mousse, all that kind of stuff. You know, right. the stuff that you and I get in a bistro in London.
Staple diet.
Yeah, yeah. You know, egg and chips. Kind of rare bird's eggs I'm talking about.
Wool.
Yeah, wool. Sort of sausages made out of variety meats.
And people.
Yeah, we have been to that Cannibalaire, haven't we? That's quite a nice place.
And then you eat it and you decide how good you think it is and then you pay accordingly.
I guess so.
Doesn't everybody just pay 2p?
Well, you would, wouldn't you? If you go in there, you'd have a
you
good,
would.
I would. I'd have a good fill of food and I'd say, look, that was all right, adequate. Here's 86p.
Mm.
And apparently, one of the questions was around sort of drinks and, you know, because alcohol obviously costs money, doesn't it? Like food does indeed.
Indeed.
Yeah. Mm. There's some logic to that, isn't there? And there might be a correlation between the two.
Right.
I might have to write that down in a minute. But anyway, tap water is completely free.
Right. It is anyway, isn't it?
I believe so.
Okay.
So I thought after we'd done this, I thought you and I would go out to dinner.
Okay.
£2 a piece. And
depending.
We could get a bit tippy on the old tap water.
I think what we should do is have a pile of 10p pieces on the table.
Yeah.
And then every time they bring a course out that we like, we add to that pile.
That's good.
And every time we don't like what
take
they
it away.
Bring, we take some away. And, you know, it's in their own hands then how much of that pound that they end up with.
My only concern is that the chef may be playing a similar game in the kitchen. Of adding and taking away things from our courses.
Like what?
Well, adding, you know, particular garnishes of a bodily nature.
Indeed. Mm. That reminds me, we should avoid the Mary Rose sauce.
We should. A little bit streaky, I feel.
Mm. And you're not... Yes, I don't think we should have the special sausages either.
No, thank you. The world is over.
Hello and welcome to the Irish News in Welsh. My name is Derek Lobster and I will later be showing you in the programme how to inseminate a family tub of coleslaw from the comfort of your own wheelchair.
And now, a ghost story.
Long ago, far away in a city, where reason and love were long forgotten, a lonely tramp sat in his own urine under a bridge, begging for coppers and eating old kebab. Suddenly he looked, and the bridge was illuminated like he'd never seen it before. A kindly stranger in a white suit stood, with a jaunty bowler and a 50-pint note. The tramp got himself up onto his knees and said, "Kindly stranger, I have not no see you in these parts before." For he had a problem with English and speaking.
And that.
And stuff. The kindly stranger did pass him the £50 English note. And he used it when he went to the shop. But as he was there at the counter, with his cans of super tea and Kestrel and his pasties in the spa shop, petrol station, cafe type area, the money disappeared. As he got outside, he realized the lonely stranger had given him a ghost note. A ghost note.
And now it's time for financial news with our chief economist, Edward Complicated. Edward.
Thank you, Moira. Many major Western economies, such as Japan, Burma and Scotland, are already in recession, and others are heading towards it at a rate of 4.3 knots per nautical hour. Many experts, such as me, are now warning that the government should have prevented this crisis, even though hordes of useless economists, such as me, didn't see it coming. This lack of government foresight was probably caused by not hiring enough economists to explain what went wrong after the fact. Sadly, we are now facing the worst economic situation since last Tuesday, a short period of mild deflation. But what is deflation, you tall and handsome expert, I hear you cry. Deflation is, as it sounds, the opposite of inflation. It's a concept which I explain in my new book, Helping People Understand My Stupid Ideas. Economic deflation means that whilst prices of things that you buy with the money in your pocket get more expensive, the long-term price pocket fluctuation affecting the innate fluid value of transactional pocket representations fall consistently over a period of monies in your pocket. And as well as being a man in the street, a man with pockets with money in these pockets, the longing lastly of time in the price period is within such elasticity and that. Or isn't it? Only pockets and money in these pockets over time and underground will tell. But even worsely, deflation applies just as much to white goods as it does to yellow or even blue goods. Deflate, 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 they all cry, and whither went the supplied side parabola of decreased spending? It was fueling the number of years of the thing in the other one, with the mass production and dividend yields not depressing the mass depression of production of yields. However, in reality, things are not this simple. Allow me to explain in detail. The model predicted by Schumpeter infused a supply-driven bubble of consumerism.
And thanks to our correspondent there, the late Edward Complicated, the latest victim of the economic downturn and a long-overdue editorial decision.
Welcome to Tricky Choice. This week, James, I've decided to mix things up a little bit.
Hooray!
What we're going to do this week is, normally I'd give you some choices of things to eat or drink.
Normally, yeah, and I do look forward to being fortified by the best of them.
Mm.
So this is a different take this week, is it?
Same format, but instead of choosing what you've got to eat or drink, you've got to choose what you're going to wear.
So
you're going to the Prime Minister's funeral,
yeah,
as a representative of the Labour Party.
Yes, absolutely.
And you've got to choose from these three sets of clothes.
Three?
Yeah,
you've got to choose.
Firstly, you can go in item of clothing one,
yes,
which is some dungarees made out of stamps.
What kind of stamps are they?
Just like normal stamps.
Current stamps, or are they historical ones?
Well, seasonal.
Seasonal, yeah. Okay, so like sort of special editions.
Christmas, Easter.
Can I have... I'd be interested in that if the dungaree pocket could be made out of a first aid cover.
No, it's got to be a stamp.
Okay.
You could have Princess Diana.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have had Princess
Diana. And that the stamp dungarees come with a hat made out of squirty cream. Now, we can spray that on. We can spray that on in any kind of design you like. You can have a beret out of squirty cream. You can have a top hat. Honestly, that's why. I'll leave that up to you.
Okay, yeah. I'll have a little think about that.
So that's choice one. Dungarees made out of stamps and a hat made out of squirty cream.
Yeah, okay.
Option number two.
Okay.
Which is the second choice. That's a suit of armour made out of lead.
Okay.
So, what you're losing...
It's quite
sporty. What you're losing speed, you are going to gain in protection.
Excellent.
Now, just to help with the lubrication, that's going to be filled up either with custard or baked beans inside.
Okay, so to keep it sort of, moist and flexible.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
And give you something to eat as well.
Because lead can be quite stiff.
Indeed. It is known, actually, for being fairly stiff, lead is.
It is.
So you've got your lead armour filled with either custard or baked beans. Would you want to choose, or do you want me to choose for you?
What's
going to be filled with, custard or baked beans?
I think I'd like you to choose, but I'd be interested whether there was a choice of having a little bit of both.
No.
Sort of savoury and sweet.
Because
I'm going to be a long time in it, aren't I? So.
It's just the beans.
Right.
That's what you're getting. And I thought, any suit of armour that you wear without a mace is going to look ridiculous.
Quite.
But I don't think we'll be able to get a mace from the costume department. So what I've decided to do is fashion you a mace out of a dead raccoon.
Oh, right. Okay, interesting.
Well, and that's less violent.
Would it be recently deceased, so it's still a bit stiff?
Yeah. Well, soggy, actually.
Okay.
So that's option two. Suit of armour made of lead, filled with baked beans and sporting a dead raccoon as a mace.
Yes.
And then there's your third option, which is the option number three. That's a fancy dress costume, just to liven things up a bit.
Yeah.
Because, state funerals tend
to be...
It can be
a bit boring, can't
they? They tend to be fairly formal.
It can be a bit dull.
Well, not in this case, because you'll be going dressed as a wizard.
A wizard?
A wizard. But instead of having, a pointy wizard's hat with, moons and stars on it, you're going to be wearing a red bowler hat.
A red bowler hat? Now, that is quite stylish.
So that's your wizard's costume with a red bowler hat.
Can I wear that at a jaunty angle?
Fairly jaunty. Not too jaunty. I mean, it's a funeral.
Not
too jaunty.
I don't want to scare anyone.
Okay, so I'll just summarise your choices for you before you decide.
If you do that, then that'll allow me to write them down.
Which tricky choice you're going to go for. Number one is the stamp dungarees with a hat made of squirty cream in a style of your choosing. Second is the suit of lead armour filled with baked beans, sporting a dead raccoon mace. And third, you're going as a wizard, but wearing a small red bowler hat.
Okay, so, and all of these things are what I can wear to the Prime Minister's funeral.
You must wear one of them.
Okay. Well, giving it some thought now, and you can probably hear the cogs going around my head. As you know, I've always been an advocate and a supporter of the Postal Service. So I am going to go with the whipped cream beret with the sporty stamp dungaree even.
The stamp dungarees?
Yes.
It's a fine choice.
Yes.
Well done.
Will you lick it or
no,
does it self-seal?
No, I've got some slave children. It will do the dressing.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's going to be quite a long and painful process, I imagine.
Well, roll on the funeral.
Indeed, fingers crossed.
And now, religious news. Drunken Church of England leaders today said that members of the clergy could be barred from eating jelly and ice cream under a controversial motion to be debated this week. The move, which coincides with intense public debate over desserts, is backed by Sir John Damp, the former Metropolitan Police Commissioner. Sir John will attend the General Synod to support this proposal. It is thought that he'll be wearing a placard promoting the rejection of jelly in the public interest, and that he may also be wearing ladies' knickers. In his first interview since leaving home this morning, Sir John said that the Anglican faith was opposed to frivolous food items of all types, and that jelly represented the worst offender in this category. He added, The issue around the J-word is that it will only serve to fuel antisocial behaviour in young people when they ought to be saving their energy to stone women priests and bludgeon homosexuals. This debate is likely to rekindle the dispute over custard, less than a week after the Muslim Council of Britain ruled that custard, when served hot, was in contravention of official doctrine. William Twatt, the deputy milk monitor of the General Synod, has circulated a revised dessert menu for official church engagements, offering a selection of sweets formally approved by the Archbishop of Tooting. These desserts include tripe, noodle doodles, and octopus. In other religious news, the Church of Ireland today formally denounced the consumption of chicken kievs due to their alleged incompatibility with the latest analysis of Scripture 674, which states that breadcrumbs, when used to encase poultry, are the work of Lucifer. And...
Hello. And welcome to Craft Hour with me, Bob Rowe.
And I'm Bobbert Rowe.
Hello, Bobbert. What a lovely lot of fun we've been having, haven't we?
Yes, I've been trying some new beard cream milked from the neck of a blue whale.
That's right. Was it fair trade, Robert?
Yes, I've been using some new oil for my beard milked from the neck of a blue whale.
That sounds really nice. I've been enjoying myself as well. I've had some badgerteer's truffles and some burnt seaweed and kelp oil to rub into my knees. Also, as a special treat later on, I'll be making us some mouse whisker pasties and putting some jungle leaves on my ailment. But first, we're very lucky, aren't we, Bobbert?
Indeed. Have you got that that cream off that elk again?
Yes, I have, but we've got a special guest in the studio.
Is it another man from social services?
No, no, we're allowed to live without their contact. It's a lovely singer who's got a lovely song, and his name is Jason Artichoke, and I think you're going to like his song. It's called The Black Carrier Bag of Love,
and it's on his new album called I've Got a Fair Trade Ironing Board.
Down away in the woods, that's when I procure my goods. I nip down to the woodland lundies with my black carrier bag full of love. I got some pate and some parsnips and eggs. They were fair trade and I had oil on my hands. And I decided to use that oil on my wife's loving face.
Fat ugly face.
As I mowed her down in the car park.
Dirty bitch deserved it.
We never got on since 1976.
Fact, you wish she was dead.
The day we met in the abattoir.
She was a pig.
We were fixing pigs.
She was one.
She said, "You fancy a sausage?" And I said, "That's not a sausage, but beware." That's when I found my big black bad bag carrier bag of love.
Smart.
Our faces met together. We had offal and tripe for tea.
She looked like offal.
And as I backed over my wife,
the fucking dead bitch,
she could plainly see
moaning
an autoerotic asphyxiation act I was carrying about with my black carrier bag of love.
She deserved it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You've left your black bag here.
Git.
Good evening. I am Dominic Sapp, Hellfire Investigator. This week, we have a special report on an epidemic sweeping the UK, low energy syndrome, or, as it has controversially been labelled by some commentators, laziness. On Tuesday, we spoke to Albert Lump of Shit Street in Swindon. Albert is reportedly a long-term sufferer of low energy syndrome, or LES. Albert, I'm sorry to wake you up this early in the afternoon. Can you describe how this condition has affected you?
It's been a terrible ordeal. I've been unable to work since 1986. I can hardly get the energy together to get down the snooker club 5 or 6 times a week. The wife has to sign on for me and collect all my benefits and allowances, free vouchers, disabled stickers for the cars. And all because I've been cruelly struck down by LES or low energy syndrome. It's just awful.
And why is it that you aren't able to do these things for yourself?
Well, it's the disease. I just find myself completely unable to drag myself out of bed until I've been bought my breakfast and the papers and had another nap. I can't be bothered to take the kids to school. I can't be asked to lift a finger around the place. I have to flag down passers-by to take my bets down to the bookies. It's affected every part of my life. Sometimes I sit there for hours and hours waiting for Julie to come home and make me a cup of tea.
And how do you feel that society has reacted to your illness?
Discrimination and name-calling. It's sickening. I thought very seriously about writing to my MP about it.
And have you?
No. Because of my illness, I'm just not able to give a fuck about it, really.
Albert, many sufferers of low energy syndrome also seem to suffer from being unemployed, fat, and in many cases stupid. You also seem to suffer from these other complaints as well, don't you?
I don't know. Probably, yeah. One thing about being a low-energy sufferer is that people tend to treat you like you're riffraff, just because the disease has made you so fucking bone idle. It's a tragedy for society, because I've got a lot to give. As long as I don't have to move out my chair, obviously. There's a fella outside the house last week, and he tripped over a car that I started repairing in the garden in 1993, and he fell and he cut his throat open, and do you know that he slowly bled to death over about 4 hours whilst I sat there watching and having a fag and doing the crossword?
That is truly shocking.
Of course, I wanted to help, but I just could not be fucked to get up. Things are so bad that I've started blaming myself, even for things like that. It's affecting everyone.
We also spoke to Mr. Lump's medical advisor, Dr. Crook. Dr. Crook, you have diagnosed over 500 people with low energy syndrome, or LES, in the last 6 months. What do you think is happening to this community?
Society is to blame. Society has made these people lazy and dim and utterly useless. It's up to us in the medical profession to help these seriously ill people. If our method of helping them actually makes things worse for everyone, then so be it. We're not medical workers. It's high time the critics left us alone to our patients and our lengthy foreign holidays and stop these endless investigations into expense accounts and whether doctors like me actually have a medical license.
And what would you say to commentators that believe that the medical profession is failing taxpayers and patients alike by legitimising able-bodied layabouts and earning a fortune into the bargain?
I would say this. It's me that has to go to these people's homes and suffer endless cups of tea and chats about the weather before giving them all a blank 12-month sick note. I then have to drive all the way just down the road to the next patient in my brand new Mercedes. It's no picnic being a GP when you work up to 12 hours per week every week with such seriously ill people and the nightmare they face every day of their lives.
Thank you, Dr. Crook. Or should I say Mr. Crook, given that you were, in fact, struck off in 1991. Next, our research team arrived at Richmond House in Whitehall to interview the Secretary of State for Health. Unfortunately, she was unable to join us, as she hadn't reported for work since 1998. so we stopped a passerby, and he informed us...
Fuck off!
There you have it. Genuine sufferers of a real and debilitating disease, or a bunch of scrounging layabouts who should be shot. You'll have to make your own mind up, if you can be asked. Join us next time on Hellfile, when we'll be examining leg-head disorder, the shocking developmental disfigurement suffered by an unknown number of people in the UK who have grown a leg out of their head. Good night.
Hi, I'm Jamal Nightshade, and you're listening to Salsa FM, a smooth dollop of fire sauce on your musical breadstick. With me in the studio tonight is Dexter Walnut.
Good evening, Jamal, and good evening, everybody. Why don't you join us for nachos later on at 9:30 nacho at Melted Cheese O'Clock to you.
That's great. And later on Salsa FM, we'll be hearing from Carson Etranger, who talks about life in the slow lane, motor neuron disease, and his battle against visual Tourette's.
So, pass the jalapenos and bend over.
We'll also be having a quick word with Marge Dent, as she pops in to relive Scat, the Austrian musical about her father's suicide.
Jamal, I'd like you to call me the bear from now on. The love bear.
Dexter, I've called you many things, but the love bear is certainly up there.
Call me the bear.
You're the bear. To conclude the show, we'll have more from Poppy Pickle as he talks about problems from acne to incontinence.
And in the meantime, I've had an email from Dr. Loveegg. He really got into that piece we played just before the sour cream and lime tortilla snack we've just had. You were listening to Baby Eat My Fajita Meat by Lamonti's Maid and the Rectal Gang.
Hold on to your hats and we'll be back in a couple of twiglets.
I'm off for a smooth, smoky, barbecue-flavoured rest, whilst your man watches Time Cop again. Man, he loves that JCVD and playing his bassoon.
It's really nacho tasty.
Join us for nachos.
And salsa.
Yes, it's only using the very latest scientific methods that we are now able to start...
You went a bit Cornish there.
We only now are able to look at that and say, what for you?
That's just simple-minded.
Sorry. I always get those two mixed up.
Yes, yeah, well, of course, this is the infamous bread bin...
Welcome to this week...
You're squeaking.
I'm not.
You have to get off that stool.
I'm not squeaking.
Honestly. Get off that stool.
It's not a stool.
Is it your wooden leg?
You have been listening to King of the Buttons, written and presented by James Sandy and David Powell, with the creative musings of Mr. Alan Jones.
All of the music that you've heard on this podcast is available from the Podsafe Audio Network. Check it out at podsafeaudio.com.
Ha 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 ha